it looks like it's time to start the call. First and foremost, I wanted to thank you for tuning in to today's conference call and web training session. I'm Russell Westcott with the Real Estate Investment Network, and welcome to this call. Make sure you grab yourself a pen and paper. We are going to be going through lots of online questions that were submitted, lots of insights, almost personal coaching in some regards. So we have a pen and paper. If you're on the phone and you're driving, you might want to pull over, grab something to write on, because there will be plenty of information to take down and jot down as for notes. Today, you are in for a special treat to hear from Canadian best-selling author Don R. Campbell. Don's going to provide us some guidance and help cut through some of the confusion that you may be feeling in the Canadian real estate marketplace right now. So without further delay, Don, some interesting times we're living in, aren't we?
I would say interesting is the term, and we're seeing that from a lot of the questions that we've been receiving over the last week or so, and the number of people who are going to be on the call and online. And what's exciting right now is that if you can cut through all the confusion, you can give yourself an advantage and do very, very well. But, you know, what we're finding is that it is so confusing and actually quite fearful. You know, I just came back from a tour of Europe talking to bankers and economists and doctors and investors, and I'll tell you right now that they're more confused than Canadians are. And it was really nice to get back here, because what I heard there, without any prompting, is that Canada still is regarded as a safe haven. That does not mean that we're not don't have bumps on the road, but at the way the world is looking at us, we are sitting rather pretty. Now, I don't mean pretty like everything's all roses, and we're going to get into that throughout the rest of this conversation.
Absolutely. And encourage everybody to keep asking your questions. For the questions we don't get to live on the conference call, we will do a post summary and get them out to you on My Rain Space in the next day or so. Before we get to all the questions here, Don, I wanted to congratulate you on something that I saw, an announcement that came out that you have raised your goal of money that you're between RAIN members and yourself that you're looking to raise for Habitat to Humanity. That goal has now been raised to $1 million. Has that far exceeded your expectations?
Russ, you know, we talked about this a couple of years ago. My goal with the Habitat for Humanity donation, with the from 100% of the royalties to Habitat for Humanity from my books, was $20,000. I think, wow, what a great legacy to leave. Well, when I got back from the trip here, I noticed that we had passed the $665,000 that RAIN members and the books and myself have all been able to raise so far. And I said, well, if we can do that without a whole lot of effort, what's a little effort going to take us to get to $1 million? And the nice thing about Habitat for Humanity is it's a hand up, not a handout. And that's pretty exciting.
Yep, absolutely. So, ready to jump right into the questions?
Let's get on with the answers, man.
Okay, let's get into the solutions. I'm going to jump around a little bit around the country. We've had a lot of from both sides of the country and all places in between. First question comes from Mo in Toronto, and he's looking for some insights into Toronto, which probably can also be applied to Vancouver's condo market. Do you believe that prices have peaked, and will foreign investment keep driving these prices any further?
That is the ultimate question, isn't it? And I also hear that all the new migrants, 100,000 people a year, are moving into Toronto, so that will drive the new real estate, the new condo market. And you know what? I think we need to step back from that myth and be quite aware that oftentimes throughout history, new migrants don't and can't afford to move into the new condo market. Now, so let's not correlate new migrants and immigrants and people moving to the city for the first time into being able to support and drive that new condo market. So let's not connect those two. Second off, it's really, really interesting, you know, because I hate myths. I just hate these things that the people just say because either they want attention or they just heard it once from their brother-in-law and they think that it's the truth. So I've been investigating those markets. And did you know that the rental market, especially in the newer, you know, built in the last 10 to 12 years and newer, in Toronto right now, the rental market is outstripping the rental supply. And that's really quite shocking when you look at the number of new condos that have come on the market and the number of new condos that have been bought by investors. Now, that can't continue, of course, but right now it is. And we're seeing rents and people bidding up rents for condos in the Toronto region. Very interesting to watch. As there are thousands, literally thousands of new units that are going to come on the market in Toronto over the next 18 to 24 months. So I'll give you a prediction right now. The average selling price of condos in Toronto are not going to go down even if the market slows down. And people say, well, why is that? Well, the truth is that the contracts have already been signed during this hot part of the market. The contracts are signed at the higher price, at the price of today. So they don't close for another 18 to 24 months. So when they close, that sale then gets registered as part of the sales in Toronto. So this new build that's coming along will help support, quote, average prices in Toronto for another 24 months. Now, as any sophisticated investor knows, never make a decision based on what's happening on average prices or average anything. It's a great way to get yourself in trouble. But watch that trend. It's contracts that are signing now aren't closing for another 18 to 24 months, and so that'll support the average price in that region. Foreign investors, let's be realistic, because of the regulations that are going on in China and the opportunities that have opened up there, people are wanting to get their money, and they're now allowed to get their money out, and they are pouring into Vancouver, and but they're looking for the downtown, sexy, kind of high-profile type of properties. And what you'll see in the Vancouver market is that $1 million and above market will start to increase in the number of units sold. That'll be ground-oriented units and condos. And the entry-level condos will sell well. What you're going to find out is the ones in the middle are going to have more days on market and a tougher time to sell. So the high-end ones will sell, the low-end ones will sell, but you'll find over the next 18 months or so that there'll start to be a softening in the middle.
Do you also feel that Canada, with, as you mentioned earlier, with its perception of being a little bit of a safe haven, will attract other foreign investment in? And also, if I believe the Forbes list just came out today with Canada being the best place to, I think it is, to run a business or set up a business or to invest your money, will those help more foreign money come into the country?
Well, absolutely it will, and that's why I went to Europe, other than the food, of course. You know, the food's important, but also to meet with all of these different professionals, and, you know, from Barclays, UBS, you know, all these different groups, HSBC, all around Europe. And what we're finding is that they are looking for, there's a lot of turmoil. There's a ton of turmoil in Europe, and everybody's seen that. They know what's going on in the U.S., and there's nothing going to go on down there during this next 12 months because of the politics that are going to be involved up into the election. They're looking down in Brazil, and there's been a manipulation, a negative manipulation of the interest rates in Brazil, and Australia's in a different spot. So what they keep looking at Canada, and they keep telling me, listen, Don, we're looking for a spot that's going to be safe and is going to be, we're going to be able to recover our money, because we think that a lot of these other areas are going to drop substantially, and Canada, even if it drops, is going to drop less than the rest of the developing, or the developed world, not the developing world, obviously, the developed world. And that's why the money is coming in here. We're getting money in here from the Middle East. We're getting money in here from Africa, for crying out loud, Europe, the UK, who don't consider themselves in Europe, although most of us do. We're even finding, I met with a bunch of investors from the U.S., you know, doctors, et cetera, professionals, and they're even talking about, you know what, if this election goes sideways, again, taking all of their money out of the U.S. and moving it into Canada. So very, very interesting, because, you know, we watch it, we see what's going on, and we aren't going to be, it's not going to be a nice, smooth, paved road. We are going to go through some bumps because we are part of the world. But the nice thing is we're sitting a little bit better than most of the others. We will be affected. Interest rates won't go up. There's just too much turmoil. But we will be affected economically because we're an exporter. The best thing that has happened to us recently is our dollar has dropped. And now, if you're going on vacation, it's not great. But if you are an exporter and you're selling your products outside of Canada, that drop in the Canadian dollar is wonderful. It's like putting our products on sale, which will help support our jobs. And jobs are what's going to support our real estate market.
So does Canada have a risk of falling into a recession again? I think everybody is fearful of this.
I don't think it really I don't think it really matters, because a recession is just a technical showing that the GDP didn't grow for some consecutive quarters, right? It's just a technical term, and everybody, it becomes self-fulfilling. What you want to know is that there are regions in this country that will grow in a recession, and there are regions in a country that will shrink during a boom. So the job of everybody who's on this call is to really start thinking regionally instead of Canada and the headlines. And yeah, I'd hate to see another quote technical recession come through, but if we go through a technical recession, it is going to be a lot less than the majority of other developed countries in the world. So once again, you have to compare what's going on here with outside. It's just that simple, that we are not immune, but you really pick your spots, look for the job growth, look for the migration of people, and you'll be in good shape. $75 oil isn't the greatest, but they're still making money at $75. Now, yeah, let's get the gas. Let's hope the gas for our car price starts to match this drop. I haven't seen it.
No, and we did have a lot of people asking questions about oil and Canada's resource economy. So, but actually, isn't it a partial dampening if the Canadian dollar drops and the price of oil drops? Isn't it help?
Or it, a little
it,
bit, yeah.
It lessens the price of oil drop.
Yeah, because the oil sold in U.S. dollars, absolutely, and the gap right now, the projects that are on board right now and that are being built right now are already into momentum. So you start to look at the migration, the job growth has been ridiculous in Alberta. It's one of the hottest job markets on the planet. Well, actually, in the developed world, you can't obviously count China, etc. or India, but in the developed world, and it's right under our nose, and still I see people rushing off to all kinds of bizarre spots to be investing. You know what? I don't care whether you invest in real estate or stocks or whatever, but I think what you need to do is choose a area and do your homework so that your money works harder than you do. And sometimes it's in getting it into an investment, i.e. a piece of real estate, that is going to ride you through any downturn and make you look like a genius on an upturn. So I talk to so many real estate investors and stock investors and guys who do both, and I say, so how's your investments done this year? And the stock guys are rather concerned because of the volatility. They really don't know which way it's going to go. Like two days ago, it goes down 300 points, and today, last I looked at lunchtime, it was up 200 points, and nothing really has substantially changed in the world. It's just somebody makes an announcement. With real estate, I don't know about you guys, but my rents all went up last month, and that's a good thing for me. And my mortgages got paid down a little bit more last month. And it's boring as heck, and it doesn't make the headlines, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Or you could be, you know, like, for example, yesterday, didn't Apple announce the new phone that came out, and it didn't meet people's expectations, so its stock price dropped by 5%.
Yeah, and sad to say today that Steve Jobs passed away today, unfortunately.
Yes.
And But that will obviously affect stock price. I don't like things that respond to emotions. I want them to respond to economic fundamentals, kind of like Drew's question, right?
Yeah, so we're going to get, I believe Drew Melnick is on the line, and I'm just going to paraphrase his question for Drew, and then he's going to be on the line if there's any more information that we need to get from it. Drew is talking about that he's sitting on some cash, and he wants to know, as a person that's beginning to, where to start. Do I get into multifamilies, or do I get into single families, or duplex, or where should I start?
Well, that's a great question. You know where you need to start is by setting the goal. What is it that you're trying to achieve with real estate, Drew? That's the big question to ask yourself. You don't have to share it with everybody on here. But if you are looking for ease of financing, ease of management, and right now, unfortunately, not as many available, but ease of management and ease of financing, and if you have the capital to do so, I would say jump right into multifamily. But the key is, you know, get that my brand new book, The Secrets of the Canadian Real Estate Cycle, which just came out this week, and pick the spots where you're going to be able to buy these multifamily properties that are going to do well. Now, I'm talking multifamily. If you can get a 18 or 20 uniter under your belt somewhere in a hot market in Canada and get it financed at these ridiculously low interest rates, lock those interest rates in for as long as you possibly can, then just manage the you-know-what out of that. And that's where I would start if I had a potload of cash. And if I was just starting out and I didn't have a potload of cash, I would do the exact same homework, but I would start to buy properties that cash flow, i.e. townhouses and single condos and some houses, like in Winnipeg, for instance.
Did that help you out, Drew? I believe you're on the line.
Yeah, no, that's a lot of help.
Right on, Drew.
Perfect. So moving on to next question came from Jill Kenny, and she was talking about completing due diligence. I know how much time and effort you do. You have an entire staff that completes due diligence across the country.
For other people.
Yes. And she wants to know, where do you find information on an area? For example, her area is Kitimat, and she wants to know where do you find the information, where do you go to, and once you get the information, how do you apply it?
Well, simply the toughest part, of course, is finding the property, or finding the economic fundamentals in a smaller center such as Kitimat, because there's lots of rumors about Kitimat. It's going to be a pipeline. It's not going to be a pipeline. It's going to be a growing this. It's going to be not going to be growing this. You know, and I keep seeing speculators jump into Kitimat before the smoke, before the stuff is being built, and that scares the you-know-what out of me. And I've seen some people really get burnt buying condos up in that region and then finding out, oh my goodness, I have 40% vacancy. The truth is, the best and number one place to start is the economic development office of the town. Now, they should have the most, if they are progressive, they should have the most recent facts and figures on the migration and the population and the average income, etc. And then what I do is I use this new thing. It's called Google. I'm kidding. I'm being facetious. And I get on there and I start to spend, because we've got to remember, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars that we're going to put in some of these cities and towns. So we need to make sure that what we're doing is spending some quality time with our computer finding out what's real and what's not real about our region. So I'm talking to the Economic Development Office. Sometimes the Economic Development Office is one person who's also the sheriff. You know, let's be realistic. It takes some work. The second thing that you must do is go there, and you have to get on the airplane and fly to anywhere that you're going to invest. I don't care if it's in Panama, Phoenix, San Antonio, Windsor, Barrie, it doesn't matter. Get on the plane and go there, because only by walking those streets and by talking to people at the Tim Hortons, tough to find a Tim Hortons, I know, in Panama, and walking around and talking to people and going to the city hall and doing that type of homework and then looking at the streets, because, you know, you take a look at Hamilton. Some streets are amazingly fantastic investments, and then one block over, it's the scariest place on the planet. So you really have to get down there and walk the streets at daytime and really get a feel of the town. Please never, ever invest sight unseen, ever. Unless, of course, you don't mind getting screwed over or a fraudulent transaction, or you want something to complain and moan about in about 2 years. Go there, knock on doors, do your homework, go talk to the city. What are the development plans? Those types of things, that's where you start. And then the province will have more stats on the smaller centers, and the federal government will have more stats like CMHC, et cetera, on the larger centers across each of the different provinces. But never, never, ever invest without going there, and never, ever, ever invest without doing that extra 10% of homework, ever.
You mentioned, would a good place to start would be grab a copy of your property gold mine scorecard, and that has all the questions for you, the 11 questions on there that you need to ask. Would that be a good place to start?
Yeah, as Jill was saying, in the books we talk a lot about doing your homework. Now, I don't sell real estate, so it doesn't matter to me whether you buy a piece of real estate or not. I'm not going to profit whether you buy a piece of real estate. My one and only job is to make sure that you ask the tough questions and you don't stop until you get the answers. And, you know, our top investment town reports, we have one for BC, Alberta, and Ontario. They're 107 pages long of the top investment cities in each of these provinces. And it lists the top 10 and it shows you all of our homework, you know, 8 or 9 pages per town. So what we find is that a lot of people say, hey, I heard from this guy on the radio that Kitimat's a great place to invest, so I'm going to go there. And they don't do any homework other than they heard it on the radio. I really, really don't want anybody to get screwed over, and I really, really suggest that you start with the tough questions and you keep asking them.
Perfect. You mentioned earlier about Hamilton, which is actually quite interesting. Our next question has come from Tracy Taylor O'Reilly. And Maddie, I believe she's on the line, and maybe if you can patch her in, would be great. I'll
read
your question.
I am here.
Hey, Tracy.
Perfect. So Tracy's bought her first property, a townhouse in Hamilton, in the spring. The market has seemed to have softened, but prices seem higher now. She's concerned about renting in the winter. Where's the market going in Hamilton, and should I wait till the spring market to buy again?
If you wait till the spring market to buy again, you will be buying exactly the same time as everybody else. A lot of sophisticated investors do very well by buying especially in the winterier parts of Canada, November, December, January, February, where there's a lot less competition. Yeah, there's a lot less listings, but the motivated vendors are still trying to sell during that period of time. So I would not wait till the spring to buy. Renting in the winter is no different than renting any other time of the year, except that you have to clean the walk. I find that it's not about season, it's about the quality of your advertisement and where you're placing those ads to get the bodies in. And but the money is going to be made by buying smart. I have one concern about Hamilton, and it is the number one place in Ontario on our top investment cities list because it provides cash flow and future potential, and the economy is diversifying, and we're finding that the McMaster Innovation Park is growing and attracting people. But over the last couple of months, the city has decided to, shall we say, stop work on any preparatory work for the LRT. So the LRT would be something that would help attract the young professionals that to stay in the city that they're trying to attract. So don't invest based on their LRT, because who knows what's going to go on. If you're going to invest, I would look around the GO train stations within 900 meters of the GO train stations, or close and easy access to the McMaster Innovation Park. And also, of course, the steel mill down there was bought fairly recently, and they keep hiring and hiring. It is a name that I'm not even going to try to pronounce. It's a German name, but they're hiring, and we're seeing some really good green shoots economically showing up in Hamilton. I would not wait till spring. I would look for cash flow properties now, and I would get a very, very good local person on my side for sure who knows the streets. Did that help, Trace?
Yeah, thanks, Don. You nailed it.
Right on.
And Tracy, I just want to give you a little bit of advice from just my own personal experience. 90% of the portfolio I have purchased has been either in June, July, or November to January. Because I find very few people, you're not competing with anybody else during those months, especially if you're investing in wintry communities.
And that's for single, by the way, Tracy, that's for single family kind of homes,
yeah,
like townhouses, et cetera. For multifamily homes, it's more of a business thing, and it really doesn't matter from January to December when those things are bought and sold. For those of you who are listening that are thinking about multifamily, for single family, I think the window of opportunity really opens up when the snow starts to fly.
Yeah, the odd thing about this summer was that the comps that I looked at were all selling at or above asking price in townhouses. And even though the inventory was low, the prices still seem to be very high. I don't know if that's normal.
Yep, it is exactly normal. Low inventory, you're going to find that there's more demand than there is supply. So what you're going to find, though, is that there's a lot of myths out there, and I'm the king of myth busting. And you'll find that a lot of investors will go away November, December, January, February, which opens up the opportunity for you.
Great. Thank you.
Perfect. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Trace. Okay, now we're going to jump into another call, the question that's come in from Kyle Zapaski, calling from Barrie. So if I've butchered your name, I apologize in advance.
At least it was you this time, not me.
Exactly. Maddie, if you can patch him in, I'm just going to paraphrase your question, Kyle, and then you can, if you have any further clarifications from Don, we'll go from there. So Kyle is a young man, 27. He works as a bartender. He's bulk of his income, he says, comes from tips, cash. That he's looking to find out if he'd be able to buy an investment property. And he lives up in the Barrie area, and he wants to know how he can prove income to qualify for mortgages. So I hope I'm paraphrasing it correctly.
Just a quick sec, Russell. Don't have Kyle on the line here, but
okay.
I can't see his name. Kyle, if you are on the line, if you just want to press *2, and we'll see your hand raised, and we'll open up your line. Otherwise, Don, I guess you want to go ahead and answer that question for him. It's a great one.
Kyle, you're not the only one in that position. You know, a lot of contractors as well do the same thing. But the truth is right now it is much more difficult to get a mortgage than it was just even a few years ago, where if you fogged a mirror and you could walk a straight line, they would give you, you know, at least 90%. And the reality is that you're going to have to look at your balance sheet. And that balance sheet is going to say, I know I'm getting cash and it's relatively tax-free. I'm not putting any words in your mouth that it's not, you're not paying tax on it. It's relatively tax-free. But if I claim that on my T4, I'm going to pay tax on it, but will it allow me to finally get that property that I want? And it's going to be up to you, Kyle, to kind of decide between what you're going to do. If you're going to start claiming it, and I know a lot of people did early on in their career, like you're 27, it's a great time to start claiming it for a couple of years so that you get some income showing on your T4s and your T1 generals. And if not, the other option, of course, is to get a joint venture partner, which, of course, Russell Westcott is the absolute Canadian master of, and his new book is coming out soon on joint ventures. But get a joint venture partner who is willing to work with you and be a 50% partner or a 40% partner, and they become the person who gets the mortgage for the property. You put the cash in and do a 50-50 or 60-40 kind of deal. You split the cash flow, split the equity appreciation, and when you sell it, you get your money back, the cash that you put into the deal, and you put your money in, and then the rest of it is split however you've decided. So it is a tough call because, you know, not a lot of people like to pay taxes, but it may be the choice that you make. What you may wish to do is get there's a whole group of what are called PK approved mortgage brokers across the country. And you may wish to go and sit down with one of them and say, here's my position. What do you think is the best strategy for me? You know, I would look for you're in Barrie. I wouldn't hesitate to contact Shannon Murray if you're looking for property up in that region, and just talk to them, because these are the kind of professionals that aren't going to try and sell you something. They're going to try and help you and solve the problem, which is a good problem to have if you're making a lot of money in cash. So congratulations, Kyle.
And Kyle, what I'd also add to that is, if you are looking for one of the PK, which stands for Peter Kinch approved mortgage brokers, if you just go to Peter Kinch, PeterKinch.com, I imagine you can contact them. And there's three up in that area: Derek Battaglia, you know, Kevin Bowgen, Jason Nugent. So there's some fantastic mortgage brokers up that way. So
absolutely, you know, get a good professional on your side who's not trying to sell you or push you into something. That's a big deal.
Perfect. Moving on to Scott Wierenka. I believe Scott's calling from Alberta. He's asking about raising money and joint ventures. I know I can jump in here in a bit, but I want to get your opinion on this first on. He's trying to do his first joint venture. He's wanting to know if he should do commercial or residential, and if he should find somebody with experience that's done the JV, or should he just go out and do it himself?
Is Scott on the line?
We just had him, and just let me a quick second see if I can find him. He was here just
there's
one
a, there's a big
ago.
Question for Scott, and that is, you know, what is your goal? If your goal is to do big money deals, like you say, commercial or residential, well, residential is much, much easier to predict the direction that it's going to go. It is much easier to fill vacancies. But of course, with the commercial, which to me, I think you mean storefronts, etc., the leases are longer and the tenants are a lot less hassle. What you need to do is find what your joint venture partner, the money partner, really wants to achieve, and what level of risk that they want to take, and figure out what you want. I know that I own a few commercial properties, but the majority of mine are residential, and I'm much happier with that. I can predict it more. I can see the migration more. They're not going to build a bunch that are going to make mine go from A property, quality properties, to C quality properties, like they can do in commercial very quickly. And it also depends on the city that you're going to be targeting. Of course, if you don't have a growth area, both residential and commercial can be real dogs. But I would really find out, A, where you want to be an expert in geographically, what type of properties you want to be an expert in. I recommend residential myself. Then I would start talking to JV partners and asking them what they are looking for, what kind of returns are they looking for, and then fit that specific joint venture partner into the type of property that will give them the returns that they're looking for.
Yep. Scott, are you there?
And
yep.
How'd that make sense, Scott?
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Okay.
And I would just reiterate the point. I had wrote a few notes down here too, Scott, but what is your expertise? Do you have an expertise in either commercial or residential?
Or residential, both? Definitely.
More residential?
Well, I'm avoiding commercial.
Well, that's a good call, because you know your joint venture partner is going to say, so Scotty, what have you done? And if you go, well, I'm just starting in commercial, and you're trying to raise money for commercial, that's going to get you a lot more no's than, I'm a bit of an expert in residential, so I'm going to, and here's what I've done, and here's what my expertise is, and it's a much easier to get a yes.
Yep.
Perfect.
The good news I'm finding out there right now is it's been actually easier than it has in the years gone by to find money partners to raise their hand and show interest. All I really do right now is I just open up a conversation of, man, are you sick and tired of the stock market roller coaster right now? And that opens up a conversation with people like you wouldn't believe. So,
yeah, it's a good time. It's a very good time for raising money right now.
All right, next question comes from Corrine from Mississauga, and she asks, is it possible to invest in real estate without a significant amount of money to begin with, i.e. no money down, other people's idle, underutilized money, or is this just another get-rich-quick scheme?
Well, the term no money down is always attractive to people because it sounds like you're putting no money into the deal. And the truth of the matter is, in Canada, they're few and far between. And the majority of the times that it's being, quote, taught, it's so you'll buy their no-money-down course, and they'll do this, and they'll do that, and let me help you, and I'll do a joint venture with you, and all that kind of stuff. The reality is, Corinne, is that you really are going to have to, that money has to transact in Canada on the majority of properties. Now, that money may be your joint venture's money, so it's really no money down for you. It may be that you're able to negotiate with the vendor who will give you a vendor take-back mortgage of the whole value of the property, and that happens. And what we get from that, of course, is it's no money down for you, but you're still going to be paying them, and you'll probably pay a premium for that property to get that no money down deal. So in the States, it's easy to get no money down deals. You know, it's get the deed, it's get all, you know, it's a completely different world once you cross over the border. But in Canada, there's going to be some sort of financial transaction in 95% of the properties. Now, here's the difference, is that if you move into commercial properties, which are multifamily properties, I'm talking about commercial, multifamily properties that are in the 10, 20, 30, 40 unit size, it's more of a business transaction, and therefore you'll be able to negotiate a much lower percentage down, because more often than not, the seller is going to be willing to take a very large vendor take-back mortgage for you, and the underlying first mortgage company will allow that second mortgage, that vendor take-back mortgage, where in single-family properties, not so much. Their banks are not very excited about having somebody right behind them taking up the rest of the equity. They want to see your money on the table. Beware of get-rich-quick scams, please. Don't buy into the stories.
Yeah, and it all means get the full story behind what they're teaching and what they're sharing. As you mentioned, the book that we're just launching, they have a whole stories of people within the book that have created portfolios, but they have used money, but they just haven't used their money. They've used other people's money. So, moving on to the next question from Lori Vaughn Sherman from Kitchener. She's asking a two-part question, so I'll read them both and then we can dive into them. There are a couple quick ones here. Where can investor find comps or CMAs on recent sales other than a realtor? And the second question is, to what extent, if any, does a landlord or owner-occupied property have to follow the Residential Tenancy Act in Ontario?
I'm going to ask for some clarity on that last question. But where can investor buy comps? You know where I got comps at over and over and over again is because I have a great relationship with a realtor. And I'm telling everybody on here is that you need to build a team that you trust in your region. And here's what can happen. If you are a consistent buyer and you're looking for properties and you want to make sure that it's going to fit your model and you're buying them from realtors. Every once in a while, if you come by a for sale by owner, you've got a relationship, you've made that realtor a lot of money. The majority of good realtors will say, let me do the comps for you. It takes them like 10 minutes and they'll do it for you and they won't ask for anything in return because you already have a relationship. Now, if it's your first property and your phone and you've found a for sale by owner and you go, hey, Jimmy, can you give me comps on this? He's going to look at you kind of go, well, I make money doing this. It wouldn't make sense for me to do that. Unfortunately, unlike the United States, where you can go to many different sites to find comparables, there are a couple of sites that you can try in Canada. Just type, you can Google it. I can't remember off the top of my head. Just Google market comparables or what's my house worth now. There's a few of those kind of sites that are out there. One really good one. I wish I remembered it. We'll get it. We'll find it. We'll put it on myrainspace.com later on. And it's in specific cities, it's got some a big component of comps. Now, with the opening up of MLS, I'm sure that some entrepreneur is going to be able to start to build a database And over the next couple of years, we're going to see an easy way to get comps. But the truth of the matter is that that right now, the best and fastest and easiest way is to have a great relationship with a realtor. And even if it's a for sale by owner, and you pay them $500 if they help you to close the deal, or $1,000 or whatever the deal is that you want to make with them. I'm telling you, having a great realtor on your team, and I am not one, however, they've made me a lot of money. Having a great realtor on your team, it is so very, very important. It's like having a great accountant and a great real estate-specific lawyer on your side and a great research team behind you is so very, very important. The other
Sean,
one
is, the website you're looking for, is it LandCorp?
No, that's just British Columbia.
Okay.
I'll find it. And it was some comparable real estate website. Usually my brain's got all that stuff in it. Anyway, to what extent, if any, does a landlord of an owner-occupied property, how are you a landlord of an owner-occupied property? I don't understand the question. If you have tenants, you must follow the RTA, the Residential Tenancy Act, in whatever province you're in. If you don't have tenants, you can do whatever the heck you want. Period.
And you can get into some pretty big trouble if you don't follow the RTA.
Oh, yeah. And here's a hint for a lot of people in Ontario. Buy newer properties because the newer properties aren't rent restricted. I think it's 2001. But we can confirm that date, too. And also, if as investors, smart guys in Ontario are buying properties that are owner-occupied, because then you can set the rent to market. If you're buying a property that's got a tenant in it already, you are under the restrictions of whatever the government decides to decree is your new income. Oh, by the way, Ontarians, you have an election coming up. Think before you vote. No emotions. Just look at what's going on and how it's going to affect your business. So very important. I'm not going to tell you which way to vote, but many of you know which way I would. Go ahead.
Yep. I'm going to add some insights in there as well. I fully 100% support the position you have about using a realtor. I've used a realtor for every transaction that I have ever done, including properties I have found on for sale by owner sites myself. I gave them to my realtor, and I paid him his commission for his time based upon his services. If you're dead against and maybe you're just brand new and you want to get a handle for market valuations, when I first started, a very quick way that I did was I went on to MLS and I found my target area and I made a little spreadsheet of all the properties for sale in that area. Now, note it's for sale. And then also, if you do some more research, you can find out that right now properties are selling for 94% or whatever your market is, 94% of list. You can take the list price times the 94% and you can get a very, very rough number. And I emphasize rough number.
At the end of the day, the appraisal is going to tell you what the value, the final value is, and either it's going to work for the financer, or the financing or the bank, or it's not going to work.
Absolutely.
Everyone's got to remember that we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on these properties. Let's not get too cheap with trying to cut corners when we're buying. And we want to make sure we got a great lawyer who knows the market inside out, because you know one little slip can come and cost you later on. And it's the same thing all the way along the process. Sometimes, you know, buying a $200,000 property is going to cost you some dough.
Perfect. Judy from Cambridge has asked the question, is when she's doing her analysis of her properties for cash flow, should I include the cost of my down payment, which should be borrowed from the LOC, and why do I never see the down payment funds costed into a cash flow performa when it's presented to me?
So the answer is, when you have a property and you are buying it, its job is to pay you. At the end of the day, its job is to pay you. And that means pay you after all of the expenses to buy that property, which means that if your funds are coming out of the bank, they don't cost you anything, they're coming out of a bank account, But if they're coming off a line of credit, that property better darn well be able to cover that interest, their interest payments, because, you know, most of the lines of credit are secured and therefore they're interest only. But that property better be able to cover all of its operating expenses plus that LOC. If not, it's not really an investment, because here's what happens, of course, is that every month you're paying out $150 or $200 in interest costs, and it starts to eat your lunch, and you start to get frustrated, and then you start to say, well, wait a minute, I can't add another property to my portfolio because already it's eating me for $200 a month or $150 or whatever it is. So, you know, you can't make up negative cash flow in volume. You're just going to get it worse and worse. So always, always make sure that when you do your analysis, and I can't remember the page number, but in Real Estate Investing in Canada book, there's a whole property analyzer. It's 2 pages long, and it will force you to write in the LOC. It'll force you to write in any vendor take back. It'll force you to make sure that you capture all of the expenses and the budget for the expenses you don't even know are going to occur. And I have no idea why you're not seeing, to answer your question, I have no idea why you're not seeing the down payment funds costed into a cash flow pro forma. I have no idea. But the truth is you should always analyze it. Always, always, always make sure that property carries it.
And the good news is you're in control of your own cash flow analysis. You can take something that someone has presented to you, but do your own numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. And do your own check on the rents and do your own check on the vacancy and the condition. And, you know, you can take everything you get in any investment, take everything you can that's handed to you, whether it's a stock investment or a mutual fund investment or a gold investment or a real estate investment. It doesn't matter. Whatever's handed you is designed to sell you that deal. So your job is to understand that and say, okay, this is really well positioned. What am I missing? What am I missing here? And what questions am I not asking to get to the right answers to figure out if this is a good deal or not? Always remember, every piece of paper that's handed to you is designed to sell you the deal. Your job is to be somewhat sophisticated, or if you're not, fake it, and say, great, I've got some follow-up questions. Let me take this home and look at it, and then email it to the RAIN office, say, what else should I ask? And then take a look at it and go, okay, the rents seem to be a little high. Why would it be a little high? Oh, and then you'll find out that it was an estimate about future rents and these types of things. Know your market, please. Know your market.
Absolutely. Next question comes from Mike in Edmonton, and it falls in line a little bit with your latest Real Estate Cycles book, Don. It talks about that real estate experts say different things. Some believe that you just need to invest based upon the right time in the cycle, while others say that you can make money in any market. Which is your approach?
Well, I know that I adjust my approach to where the market is on the cycle. And, you know, chapter 15, 16, and 17 are all about the tactics that I use and how I adjust them to different parts of the cycle. Yes, you can make money in every market. And every market condition, even a down market, I've made a ton of money in. But the reality of the situation is, if you're using the strategy that was happening and making you wealthy in the boom, it's not the same strategy you should be using when the market is going down. It doesn't make any sense. It's like anything. You need to find what works and what happens. So the answer is, yes, you can make money in any market, but not using the same strategy all the time. And so in every market, number one rule, I don't care if it's booming, busting, or flat, is you have to be getting cash flow from that property within a month. And if you're not getting positive cash flow, that means that you're increasing your risk, so that if the music happens to stop, say, for, as we saw a couple of times over the last decade, where the music just stopped and the market just stopped, and people got stuck because they've watched too many half-an-hour television shows that it looks like all you do is you buy them, you paint them, and you flip them, and you make $50,000. And it works if the market's skyrocketing. But as soon as that music stops, you're standing there. You've got three properties, or even one property, but most people, three properties that you can't sell, and you won't be able to get enough rent to carry them, and that's where bankruptcies come. And it's because greed kicked in. Adjust to each market. Listen, this is a long-term time horizon, this real estate. And as you'll see in the real estate cycle book, is that these cycles are decades long. And every once in a while, you'll get bizarre market influencers like these emergency low interest rates. And they're influencers. They aren't actual fundamentals. They're not supporting the market. They are influencing the market in a wrong direction based on the fundamentals. Those types of things you have to be aware of so that you don't get caught holding a property that's not going to make you money or is going to take you to the poorhouse. Because it doesn't make sense to be owning something that the only way you're going to make money is if it goes up in value. That makes zero sense in the real estate world. It's great when it does, but that's the dessert. As the great Thomas Beyer said, that's the dessert. What you want is the meat and potatoes, which is the mortgage pay down and the cash flow. And the equity appreciation is the dessert in the meal. So that's how you have to look at it. Look for the regions where the job growth is, the migration growth is, where you can see some consistent job growth, not just a quick boom like we're seeing in some areas. If you want really boring and really consistent but doing very well, look at Winnipeg. Winnipeg has just kind of chugged along and done its thing, and it didn't even show during the recession. It didn't go down. It didn't do anything. It just kind of chugged along, and all the investors there did very, very well while other people were panicking. So you can always find markets that you can do well. And remember, just because it's cheap doesn't mean it's good. And buying properties at $35,000 and $40,000 and renting them out for $600 or $700 sounds wonderful. But what's your exit strategy? What happens when the unemployment rate goes from 16% to 28% in that region? Because those properties are cheap for a reason. If they were of real value, they would be at the real value price. If you're getting them for $25,000 and $30,000, there is a reason. And especially if you're talking out of the country, because they've tried to sell them to the locals. And the locals ain't buying because they know something that you don't know. So that's why they come over the border and say, hey, Jimmy, take a look at this property. So make sure you do your homework. Make sure that you use a really good service that'll help you do your diligence in the United States if you're going to buy in the States. Use a good service or do your own homework if you're going to buy in some of the regions that seem a little bit depressed in Canada. Same idea. Cheap is not good. Couple of little tidbits because I know we're running out of time here. But Russ, for investors, I know a lot of people are ignoring this across the country. But watch for the giant contract that's going to be coming out of Ottawa for the shipbuilding. There's a giant contract coming, and when that contract is decided, who's going to get it? Watch those cities and towns. There's going to be a micro boom of speculators going in there, and that could be Halifax, could be Victoria, could be, you know, it could be all anywhere, obviously, on the water. And then it'll slow down as the speculators get out, and that's a great time to get into those markets, because here's what's going to happen is the migration of population to those regions and the jobs that it's going to create is going to be going on for a long time. You don't have to get in before, because that's risky. You don't have to get in during the craziness right after the announcement, but right after that, you're going to do very well. Look at the money that's being spent. Fort McMurray can't keep up. Calgary can't keep up. The vacancy rate in Winnipeg is next to nothing. Look for those types of towns where you're going to win over the long term, not some of the other towns that shall remain nameless that you can buy just because they're cheap. Super, super, super important. Be an investor, not a speculator, and make sure you're doing your homework.
Yep. So, Don, you've been harbored up in your office the last couple of days, and you've been working on. Every so often you come out and you have this big grin on your face of the research you've been doing on the markets. Your upcoming ACRE program is coming up very shortly. What will you be presenting at these events in Edmonton and Vancouver?
Are you saying that I'm a stats geek? Is that what you're saying?
You absolutely are. come look at this graph. Come look at this graph.
You won't believe this graph, brother. And you take a look at it, and this ACRE, I'm making it extra special because you know I've been traveling around the world. I've got all kinds of brand new research. It's in Edmonton, but I know we've got people coming from all the way from Halifax and Victoria to it for this. It's a whole weekend conference, and my job there is to tell people where we are in the cycle, what tactics to be using, how to get financing in the world today, and it's different than it was even 3 months ago. My goodness, they keep changing. And the truth is, I really want people to leave there not all pumped up, full of sugar and excitement and get rich quick. I don't want them to come there and spend thousands of dollars on follow-up conferences or any of that kind of stuff. What I want people to do is come there with a goal of discovering how today's market and the world volatility, how it's going to affect them, how it's going to affect their real estate, wherever they are, from Halifax to Victoria to Winnipeg, and how they can take advantage of it. Because despite all the turmoil, despite all the economic turmoil that's going on, we all still have financial goals. We all want to retire at some certain point. We all have children that we want to put through university. We all have that hot special car that we want to buy. Whatever it is that the goal is, the goal doesn't change because the world is economically in turmoil. What changes is the tactic used to get there. And if you're sick and tired of get rich quick and you're sick and tired of that kind of stuff, I'm going to show you enough statistics. Even if you don't like statistics, you will like statistics because I'm going to make them about you. That's what I'm going to do that whole weekend. I'm going to be on stage for 18 hours, more than that actually, but minimum of 18 hours, making sure that people leave there with the knowledge that it takes to get to achieve the goal that they want. There's a lot of confusion in the market. The 450 people that are going to be there are going to leave there completely clear on what's coming and where we are in the cycle and how to take advantage of it.
Just as a reminder for everyone listening on the call, there are only 2 acres left for 2011, and the first one is upcoming in just 10 days, October 15th and 16th, which is in Edmonton, and November 5th and 6th, which is in Vancouver. And lately it's been about, 20 people a day registering for the Edmonton one, so I would imagine sometime shortly after Thanksgiving, the registrations will be turned off. So if anyone on the call would like some information, you can always call the RAIN office at 1-888-824-7346. We have some people standing by right now if you are interested in getting a little more information or registering for it. And what I've decided to do, Don, is have a special, because everyone who is listening to this call is an action taker and they should be rewarded.
Sure.
So on the webpage where you're listening to this, or if you're phoning in, you can get access to the webpage. There is a link there that you can get a early bird offer, and you can get an extra 10% off, and you can get another CD of a meeting. You can attend the Friday meeting. You can get $200 off the regular price, and you can get also get an autographed copy of your Real Estate Investing in Canada book, all for the price of $528.30. And I don't think we've ever offered that price, and I just wanted to give it to everyone listening on this call.
Hey, RAIN members, if there's any RAIN members on here, you get to go for free, but you do have to pre-register because there aren't any seats. But we really want to make sure that we understand that this call wasn't about a pitch. It was about making sure that you guys get clear on here that there are opportunities, and they're not get rich quick. They're not high sugar, get excited. You don't have to chase a bunch of rabbits. Russ has just put a great deal together. I am putting together the best ACRE that I've ever done, period. And ACRE means it's the authentic Canadian real estate system. Well, it's on steroids for these two events. And I would love to be able to help you see through this fog that's going on, for sure.
Yep. And that's the best way we know how, is to help you through the fog at the upcoming event. So just one more time, you can call our office at 888-824-7346, or there is a link to get more information for you there. So I see we're pretty well right on the dot here, Don. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to leave for everyone?
Absolutely. The reason that I do so much travel, other than the food, of course, is to keep my perspective. I don't want to drink my own Kool-Aid, if you know what I mean. I want to make sure that what's coming out of my mouth and what's coming out of my research team, who are amazing, by the way, what's coming out of them is true and real and unbiased. And you could see what we do is super clear. This trip has really opened my eyes to say that we have some opportunity within Canada. We will have some bumps along the road in Canada. We are going to see demand continue to keep the yields down on our bonds. And that's going to provide a great interest rate. I saw some stupid interest rate today. It was under 3% for four-year money. That's ridiculous, by the way. But I'll tell you right now that the unfortunate thing is that I've seen this before, is Albertans are always the last to see before their market's going to go crazy. And it's the outside the province who believe it long before the Albertans do, because they've seen the cycles. And Canadians are always looking outside of themselves and outside of their country to find the deal, when unfortunately the people around the world are finding the deal in Canada. So please, don't be emotional about real estate. Don't be emotional about any investment. Just play it smart. Do your homework. Ask the tough questions. When you phone the office here, and Russ gave you the number, ask them the tough questions. Say, you know, what's really going on? How, you know, it can't be that good. What's the deal? Ask us. We've been doing this for 20 years, almost 20 years, and believe me, I've seen the people who have done well, and they're the ones who are calm, clear, and collected, and have a very good goal. So thank you so very much for your time. I know that we're right around the hour mark, as promised, and I will answer some more questions online on myrainspace.com, any of the questions that didn't get answered. And all I can say, Russ, is thanks for having me on, brother.
Hey, no problem. I'm glad to have you. I know how busy you are and how much you got on the go for many of your businesses. So for you to take an hour, everyone on the call, thanks you. So thank you very much. And a special thanks to everyone listening tonight. Just one more time, if you are interested in getting more information about RAIN or the upcoming events, office number is 888-824-7346. And the upcoming Acres are Edmonton, October 15 and 16, and Vancouver, November 5 and 6. So I strongly encourage you to give us a shout, even if you want to have a question for us. We're going to compile the questions we didn't get to, post them up on My Rain Space as some follow-up. I look forward to meeting each and every one of you at an upcoming event. It's Russell Westcott signing off, everyone. Good night.